Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It starts right here, the consumer economy, on container ships like this one, the Rotterdam. Hundreds of ships just like it pull into American ports every day, each one of them crammed with enough consumer goods to fill thousands of tractor trailers. The products inside are basically steroids for local economies all over the country.
Within about 8 days or so, they'll be in the Midwest. So many days after that, they'll end up on shelves. Then the cycle begins all over, and it goes on and on and on.
But how long can it keep going on? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Academy of Family Physicians, personal preventive care for better patient health, and reduced costs for business, aafp.org/value. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Friday, the 9th of November, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you with us. And welcome to Consumed, a special series about the consumer economy here on Marketplace and half a dozen other American public media programs. We've spent a year learning how the consumer economy affects us, how it touches more than just our wallets. We'll share our discoveries with you over the next 9 days as we explore how our economy, our culture, and even ourselves are shaped by our insatiable appetite for stuff.
I want to get some jeans, that purple shirt.
I need the iPhone like I need air.
We wanted to be first in line to make sure we got what we wanted. If it doesn't last, it's okay. It was only $6.
The object of that frenzy, 40% of all the imports Americans buy, comes in on ships like the Rotterdam through the waters off Long Beach, California. It's part of the biggest port complex in the country, more than 10,000 acres of nothing but commerce. You could call it the mouth of the consumer economy, an economy that's only been getting hungrier and hungrier. Art Wong is with the Port of Long Beach. And Art, you started here, as I understand it, 20 years ago. What was this place like back then?
Some of the shipping terminals, like the one we're going into, were just opening at that time, and we thought they were huge. And now the trade has grown so much that this is a relatively small facility. We've got plans now to essentially triple it in size.
Is there any sign of it slowing down anytime soon?
Not at all. Every projection we've had for how fast the port was going to grow has proven to be too conservative. There's only so much room here. The roads are only so big. The railroads can only handle so much cargo. We're not sure how we're going to deal with this doubling or tripling or quadrupling of cargo in the coming years.
Is there a way to get some kind of handle on the value of this place, what happens here every day?
We've had a labor dispute here a few years ago where cargo stopped moving through here, and within about a week, the president had to order everybody back to the bargaining table because shelves were starting to empty, parts weren't getting to factories, the economy was coming to a standstill, they were starting to lay off workers.
Do you ever wonder how long the American consumer can keep it up, can keep just going and going and going?
You know, we're being stretched, and I turn to my kids every so often, and I ask them, how many more pairs of jeans do they need? How many more handbags can they buy? And how much more room do they have in their closet? And they keep going, and they keep buying, and the port keeps seeing more and more cargo coming through here.
Art Wong at the Port of Long Beach, thank you so much for your time, Art.
You're welcome.
You know, Art's got a good point, because our closets are bigger than they used to be, and most of us have more of them. The average new house in this country has doubled in size since the 1950s, which prompted a question. What if everybody in the world consumed like the average American family? We sent Marketplace's Sean Cole to find that family, and he didn't have to look too far.
Because what family could possibly be more average, more consumerific than...
Give me 700 Krusty Burgers!
I'm old! Gimme!
Isn't there anything faster than a microwave?
Bing! Sadly, they're also fictional. I was going to have to find a real family, the real Simpsons. And if you Google the phrase, The Real Simpsons, you'll find the website of Dan Simpson.
Well, come on in, Sean.
Hey, folks.
This is my family.
He lives about 25 miles outside L.A. with his wife, Dina, and their daughters, Anna and Krista.
Or also known as Marge, Lisa, and Maggie.
There's a Bart, too, Dan's son, Micah, who's in Hawaii now. Anna goes to a local college. Krista's still in high school. And just like Lisa on the show, she plays the saxophone. Which is probably what sold me on them. Even though Dan kept telling me over and over before my visit, we're not really your average consumers.
This is our humble little abode. It's not.
Dan showed me around while my colleague, Joellen Easton, asked the other Simpsons about their consuming habits.
Well, we're about halfway through, so it won't take too much longer.
The survey basically helps her estimate how many acres worth of the Earth's resources a given person consumes. It's broken up into four main categories. Number one.
Oh, it's great to be indoors with my family.
Housing.
How big is your house?
A little less than 1,000 square feet.
About half the size of the average new house in this country. So the real Simpsons use a lot less fuel and electricity than the average American. Dina says back in April, all of their utilities combined cost only $84.
Some people say that their electric alone is over 100. I go, how do you do that? Ours is 30. So they must really have a lot of electrical stuff or waste.
And waste is not what these Simpsons are about. They make a point of living modestly, mainly because they're devout Christians. Dan works at a Pentecostal church in L.A. proper. Which brings us to category two, transportation. Remember the episode where the Simpsons tried out that SUV, the Canyonero?
The Federal Highway Commission has ruled the Canyonero unsafe for highway or city driving. Canyonero.
Well, the real Simpsons were driving the Canyonair No.
That little Ford Escort is our car.
Oh, if there's no traffic, Dan can drive to work in 35 minutes. But he doesn't. He spends at least 3 hours a day commuting on buses and trains. It's his downtime, he says.
So I like it. Plus, I'm able to keep a car off the road, which for me is a good value when it comes to global warming, all those things.
So that's important to you?
It is.
Dina works at the elementary school 7 minutes up the road by foot. So between errands and taking the girls to school, they clock maybe 260 miles on the car a month, about a quarter of the national average.
Can I take your order?
Number three on the survey, food.
Shall we have dinner?
This isn't just about how much you eat. Meat and packaged food, and eating out a lot, use up more resources than, say, making a taco salad at home.
There's sour cream in.
Though every Sunday, after church, the real Simpsons head to a local Mexican restaurant. Or LA's famous In-N-Out burger.
Mm-hmm. I don't prefer In-N-Out because I like my burgers flame broiled.
It strikes me that y'all are actually more like the Flanderses than the Simpsons.
Dan didn't take kindly to that. He says the neighbors of the TV Simpsons give Christians a bad name. Still, the real Simpsons love the fake Simpsons. They love TV in general. And movies. DVDs. Which brings us to the last category, goods and services.
When something breaks, do you try to fix it?
They do usually try to fix it, except maybe where home entertainment is concerned.
We have, in our household, a television and DVD player in every room. And if one of them is broken, it gets replaced. Soon, immediately.
Which might be the only average-ish thing about them. Still, when my colleague Joellen crunched the survey numbers, the results were kind of startling. If everyone on the planet lived like the average person in this house, it would take about three planet Earths to sustain our population.
What more can we give up?
This is Marge.
I mean...
Dina.
I walk to work. We live in a teeny tiny house. We don't have central heating or air.
And yet their modest way of life, extrapolated across the population of the globe, would ultimately consume the globe. Because a lot of their consuming is done for them by utility companies and transport lines and just the demands of a normal American life. Still, the real Simpsons are doing pretty well. If everyone in the world consumed like the average American, we'd need about six Earths to sustain ourselves.
The way people act around here, you'd think the streets were paved with gold.
They are.
Yeah!
I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
You can meet the real Simpsons and calculate what a world filled with consumers like you would look like on our website. It's marketplace.org. Just click on the link for the interactive game that says Consumer Consequences. There's a technical term for what we're doing as we eat and shop and drive and go about our daily lives. The word is overshoot, when a population uses up resources faster than they can be replaced. Today, we're consuming about 30% more trees, fish, and fossil fuels than the planet can regenerate. We can run a deficit like that for a little while, but there are limits to how big a hole we can dig before it gets too deep to get out of. To help us understand those limits, we spoke with Jared Diamond. He's a professor of geography at the University of California, Los Angeles. You might know him better, though, through his books, Collapse, among others. And when we talked, I asked him whether we've overshot our resources already.
Of course we are in overshoot, and everybody knows that we are in overshoot, and we are overshooting the things that people talk most about. First thing we're running out of is oil, and everybody knows it. Second thing we're running out of is water. Something like 70% of the fresh water in the world is already utilized. Topsoil, we're exploiting it, and it's running off into the ocean. We've already exhausted something like maybe half of the topsoil that was originally in the Great Plains. And then fish and forests.
Is the rate of use increasing? Are things getting worse more quickly than they did 20 years ago?
Yes, things are getting worse more quickly for obvious reasons, namely that human population is increasing, and worse yet, average consumption rates are increasing. That's to say, out of the world's 6.5 billion people, the majority are in the so-called third world, but they are working hard to catch up.
The same way I would imagine there's no one thing that you can point to where you would say that's the tipping point of decline, is there one thing that can be done to reverse that decline?
Yes, and that is to stop looking for the one thing that we can do to reverse the decline. The reason is that there are about a dozen major problems, and we got to solve them all. If we solve 11 of those problems, but we don't solve the water problem, we're finished. Or if we solve 11 of those problems, but we don't solve the problem of topsoil and agriculture, we're finished. So we got to solve all 12 problems and not look for that one problem that's the most important.
It seems to me what we're missing is the or else part of this discussion. There's a whole list of things we have to fix. What happens if we don't?
History is full of the or else's. For example, the most advanced Native American society of the New World, the Maya, who had astronomy and astronomical observatories and writing and books, they chopped down their trees, they ran into water problems, and the big Maya cities that American tourists go to visit today, they got abandoned.
Are we seeing those crashes anywhere today?
Absolutely. And the African country of Rwanda, the most densely populated country in Africa, began to get deforested, massive problems of soil erosion, too many people, not enough food. And in 1994, Rwandans transiently, quote, solved, if I can put it in quotes, their population problems in the most awful way imaginable. Namely, 6 million Rwandans killed 1 million Rwandans in brutal ways and drove another 2 million into exile. That's an example of a country that did not master its environmental problems.
How much time do we have left?
If we carried on as we are now, then I would expect that we will not have a first world lifestyle anywhere sometime between 30 and 50 years from now.
Concentrates the mind.
Yes, it does. To know that you're going to get shot tomorrow morning does grab your attention.
Jared Diamond teaches geography at UCLA. He's also the author of the books Collapse, How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed. For more on his thoughts and alternative views on resource overshoot, go to marketplace.org. Click on that link that says consumed. You'll find some ideas for solutions there, too. Coming up, what happens to all the stuff that's on board this container ship after it's unloaded?
There is nothing that hasn't been made by man that hasn't been chucked.
Trash troubles and more on our special series, Consumed. But first, let's do the numbers on the consumer economy. U.S. consumer spending has nearly doubled in about 20 years, a fact that has literally changed the national landscape. The Census Bureau says 2.3 new shopping malls opened every day in 2005 for a whopping total of 48,695. Altogether, those complexes cover some 890,000 acres. That's about the size of the state of Rhode Island. The stuff inside those malls didn't get home on its own, of course. The Department of Transportation says we drove 40% more on shopping trips in 2001 than we did about a decade earlier. Now, are we getting any happier for all this shopping? Yeah, no, not really. Back in 1957, when Americans' average income was just $10,000, 35% of us claimed to be very happy. Only 34% felt so good in 2004, even though incomes had multiplied 2.75 times. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. By Siemens, from strengthened urban infrastructures to sustainable environmental solutions to advanced healthcare technology, Siemens' 70,000 U.S. employees are providing solutions for America. And by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth. These days, it seems that everyone is talking about sustainability. Want to know how you fit in? A new online game from American Public Media can help you find out what the world might look like if everyone lived, or at least consumed, like you. Go to our website, marketplace.org, and click on Consumer Consequences.
Here's something you might not expect. Thanks to America's trade deficit, we're stuck with a glut of those hulking shipping containers. They arrive full and don't have anywhere to go. But they're an engineering marvel, designed to stack on top of each other and hold fast in rough seas. So some architects are recycling them into 1, 2, or 3-story homes. They transport easily, pulled off the boat, and trucked to the site of your future front door. Cut in windows and they'll contain you and all your stuff. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
Welcome back to Marketplace and our series Consumed, special week-long coverage of the consumer economy on this and other American public media programs. I'm Kai Rizdahl. After our container ship, the Rotterdam, ties up at Long Beach, the choreography of the American economy kicks in. Giant cranes ride over there, lower containers down from the deck onto the beds of these waiting trucks. Nationwide, this happens more than 80,000 times a day. Globalization is what that's called. And the scale of it is breathtaking. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports, so are the side effects.
My name is George, and I'm 8 years old.
Hi, my name is Juliana Rodriguez, and I'm 14 years old.
My name is Carla, and I'm 15 years old.
Little Angela is too shy to speak around microphones, but she's 4. All these children and their mother, Laura, suffer from asthma. Earlier this year, Angela started wheezing in the back seat of the car. Laura sprang into action.
I was driving, so I had to pull over. I gave her the quick relief medication, first puff, then second puff, and her coughing wasn't stopping.
The Rodriguez family has plenty of company.
Good job, Kevin. Tiene los pulmones funcionando muy bien.
19% of the children in Long Beach have been diagnosed with asthma. That's nearly double the national rate. This port city is an air pollution hotspot, one of the worst in the country. The culprit is fine particulate matter. This and other diesel pollutants have increased so much in recent years, they now merit their own category. It's called goods movement pollution. And it pours out of all the diesel trains, trucks, and ships that bring us consumer products.
Ocean-going ships burn some of the dirtiest fuel in the world.
Sam Atwood is with the South Coast Air Quality Management District.
It's known as bunker fuel, and it's relatively cheap, which is why it's used.
But it also has 2,000 times more noxious sulfur than the diesel used by trucks.
This is really much more serious than we had thought before.
Alisa Nicholas is CEO of Long Beach Children's Clinic. She says lung function isn't only at risk, but the actual formation of this vital organ as well.
We now have studies that actually have shown decreased lung growth that is associated with air pollution.
And that's not all. Particulate pollution is now linked to cancer and heart disease. Frank O'Donnell, president of Clean Air Watch, says transport emissions may be most severe in Southern California, but they're actually a national problem.
The U.S. EPA has noted that particulate pollution from diesel engines has shortening the lives of more than 20,000 Americans each year right now.
That's 20,000 Americans essentially dying from consumption and its infrastructure. Officials at the ports of L.A. and Long Beach are now aggressively trying to reduce diesel emissions. Many of the shipping companies, for example, have already agreed to modest changes. Long Beach port spokesman Art Wong.
We've gotten a couple of our companies to sign leases where they agree to plug in their ships to electricity at the dock so that they don't use dirty diesel engines while they're docked at our berths.
And at least one shipper has switched to low sulfur fuel on its own. But air quality regulators say voluntary measures aren't enough. Again, Sam Atwood.
Southern Californians are paying a portion of the price of our relatively cheap consumer goods with their health, with their own lungs. This has to change.
Problem is, it's unclear who's in charge. Shippers say they're governed by international law, not local regulations. Interstate rail companies say only federal laws apply to them. Short-haul truckers plead poverty in the face of costly fees and upgrades. And if cleanup mandates become too onerous, says Art Wong, it puts the port at risk.
There's always the threat that if we scare this business away, you know, we'll have cost this region many thousands of jobs. We're in competition with ports up and down the West Coast that would love to take this business away from us.
And that's why nobody realistically expects the air here to clear overnight. Locals, and in fact the nation as a whole, are now dependent on the jobs and the abundance of cheap consumer goods now flooding the country. In Long Beach, California, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Here's an update on Sarah's story for you. The Port of Long Beach adopted plans just this week to ban the dirtiest diesel trucks by the year 2012. That's not going to dent emissions from ships or railroads, but it could cut truck pollution by as much as 80%. In the meanwhile, there's a new report out also this week in the journal Environmental Science and Technology that links as many as 60,000 deaths every year worldwide to emissions from cargo ships alone. We said up at the top of the program we were at the mouth of the consumer economy, the Port of Long Beach. Well, welcome to the other end. Puente Hills is the biggest landfill in America, a 1,300-acre mountain of trash not far from the port. You might be thinking, ugh, a dump, right? But that would change if you could actually see this place. Puente Hills is state-of-the-art. From across the street, you can't even tell what it is. All you can see is neatly terraced landscape. You can't smell it until you're standing on top of it. Not every landfill is built like this, but what's the matter with garbage anyway? Marketplace's Tess Vigeland was wrestling with that same question, so she went out to ask some people who'd know.
All right.
I figured if anyone could give me insight into trash, it's the garbage man. So I hitched a ride with mine.
John. Want my last name too?
It's Willis. John Willis has a front row seat to the fact that we Americans, on average, throw away 4.5 pounds of garbage every day. That's a heavy load, but John waxes philosophic about it.
Well, in the beginning, we just had the trash.
He can also wax biblical.
That's the trouble with garbage. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
And no problem waxing homespun.
There is nothing that hasn't been made by man that hasn't been chucked.
John's wife used to send him out with a shopping list. He says he could find anything the family wanted. Boomboxes, barbecues. But these days, trash collection is a clean, automated process. A hydraulic arm on his truck does all the hard work. He rarely gets out of the front seat. One truck can collect 10 tons in 2 hours. And when that's done, it's time to head for the landfill.
Wow, prime property. Jeez.
Yeah.
Not really, but the site overlooks downtown Los Angeles with nary a rat in sight. So I popped our question.
So what's wrong with garbage?
Well, there's nothing right or wrong, really. I mean, it's a fact of life.
It's also a fact of life that some folks, most actually, don't want landfills in their backyards.
So we will run out of space, and we're just going to have a harder time trying to find other space. You know, it's just going to be more expensive to take care of the problem.
So money's an issue, but there are other problems not apparent to the naked eye.
When we bury these resources in the ground, we're generating greenhouse gases.
Elizabeth Reut is the author of Garbage Land on the Secret Trail of Trash. The gas she's most concerned about is methane.
Methane is a potent greenhouse gas. It's 19 times stronger than CO2 at trapping heat around the earth.
Whoa!
And landfills are, Yeah, so it's important to keep methane out of the air, and landfills are the largest anthropogenic or man-made source of methane in this country.
So maybe methane is the smoking gun, but is it the only one? Not from the standpoint of the most unusual trash experts I consulted, a group in New York City calling themselves Freegans. They try to live without spending money and invited me to Manhattan to see things their way. Late one night in June, I did.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our trash tour.
Organizer Janet Kalish leads New Yorkers around the city's dumpsters. She wants them to appreciate the volume of waste that's inside. More to the point, she wants them to eat it.
Amazing.
Yes.
There it is, the garlic, the onion, the sesame, the poppy. You can smell it. Yeah, it smells just like
I feel like I'm in a deli.
Janet's colleague, Adam Weissman, says that so much perfectly good food is thrown out every single day that he hasn't bought any from a grocery store in 12 years. And this day seemed to prove his point.
This is the dairy case right here. A couple of dozen butters and about a dozen packages of dozen eggs.
Holy cow. Yeah, really. Look. The cow and everything.
Wow, this smells good.
We found fresh broccoli, fresh bread, packaged carrots. All in all, enough food for a banquet, let alone a healthy diet. I asked Kalish why this happens.
It's just the fact that the supermarkets are throwing away vast quantities because they're ordering too much, they're producing too much, and they want to have this vision of abundance that we're so used to in this country.
That need for abundance, the Freegans point out, doesn't stop at food. Literally tons of usable products end up curbside, clothing, furniture, packaging, and it doesn't stop there.
What are you carrying?
A fax machine I just found.
A fax machine?
Run away.
My garbage man was right. There's nothing made by man that hasn't been chucked. And that, says Freegan Adam Weissman, is the ultimate trouble with trash.
Consumers have been impelled to think that waste should be our way of life, that convenience means throwaway product, and as a result, spend more than we need and ultimately consume our planet's resources.
Problem or not? In Manhattan, I'm Tess Vigeland for Marketplace.
You can hear more trash talk from Tess this weekend on our personal finance program, Marketplace Money, and on the other American public media programs that are collaborating with us on this series about consumerism in America. Find out more on our website, marketplace.org. Click on the link that says Consumed.
Marketplace is supported by creditcards.com. An online destination for consumers to search, compare, and apply for credit cards. On the web at creditcards.com. By Grant Thornton, dedicated to serving their clients worldwide with a passion for the business of accounting. On the web at grantthornton.com. And by Putnam Investments, where a diversified mix of international investments can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note on a Friday afternoon, we throw away 29 million tons of plastic every year in this country. It takes about a bajillion barrels of oil to make all that plastic, which works out to 10% of all the oil that we use. That's 10% of something often pulled out of a hole in the ground halfway around the world, headed straight for another hole in the ground right here. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow Industrials tumbled for a third straight session off 223 points, almost 1.7%. The NASDAQ gave up 2.5%, 68 points. The S&P 500 shook off 21 points. That is 1.4%. You can hear more of Consumed this weekend on Speaking of Faith and Weekend America. Monday on the Marketplace Morning Report, the Consumed Frenzy continues with a look at fast, faster, and fastest fashion.
This overturn in this store is very quick, so if you see it, you have to get it, because it may not be there next time you go back.
Our series will be here when you come back. I'm Kai Rizdahl. I hope you can join us as Consumed continues all next week.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.